additional property tax relief and then increase the maximum. What we do or how we adjust the market value of homestead credit to get the $20 million is right now you get 0.4% of the first $76,000. We lowered that to $75,000, so your maximum will be $300 instead of $304. And then from there, Madam Chair, remember it goes then down gradually. Right now, current law takes you down $9 of market value homestead credit for every $10,000 of value. This would take you $10 for every $10,000. So it would ultimately end up bottoming out at $375,000 versus the current at $414,000. So that's where we get the... So I will stand for questions, Madam Chair.
Okay. Any questions for Representative Marquardt? Any questions from members? Representative Marquardt, we do have a quorum now, so would you like to move the bill?
I will move House Bill 2024 for the possible inclusion into the division report.
Okay, Representative Marquardt moves House File 2204 into the division report. Thank you very much. Any members in the audience that would like to testify for or against House File 2204? Any public testimony? Well, Representative Marquardt.
Madam Chair, I'll renew House File 2204 be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report.
Very good. Representative Marquardt renews his motion to include House File 2204 into the property tax division report. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, committee members. Thank you very much, Representative Dietrich, for chairing that. We are now going to move to House File 2129, Representative Bly. And we need to adjourn today at 4:15, so we're going to give about 10 minutes max for this bill, but Representative Bly, I see you have testifiers here, so please proceed. Anyway, does anyone care to move House File 2129? Representative, all right, Representative Tilbury, move House File 2129 for possible inclusion into the division report. Please proceed, Representative.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt and members. This bill is the result of years of working with constituents who are commercial property owners in my community, and I did bring along Ross Currier, who has the Downtown Development Corporation, and would like to speak for a few minutes on why this bill is necessary. Go ahead.
Please proceed. And welcome.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak to you today. My name is Ross Currier. I'm the Executive Director of the Northside Downtown Development Corporation, a nonprofit organization dedicated to downtown vitality in Northside, Minnesota. We've been working on this issue for at least 4 years. First with former Representative Eric Cox and more recently with Representative David Bly. Since 2000, commercial property taxes have increased by double-digit percentages every year. That's right, most city owners have seen their taxes increase by over 200% in the past 7 years. During the same period of time, rental rates have remained flat, or in many cases have even declined. As a result, each year there are fewer dollars available for basic maintenance, much less money for building improvements. We know that we are not alone. In December of 2007, we hosted a regional summit on the issue and found that other communities are having similar experiences. These older commercial districts are important to Minnesota. These districts are the most visible indicators of community pride and be a key asset in the efforts to recruit and retain residents and businesses, serve as a focal point for gathering place for our citizens, and symbolize our community's heritage. The NDC supports the policy change before you now. We believe that this action will help ensure that older commercial districts continue to contribute to the health and vitality of our communities, support the retention and recruitment of residents and businesses, and help maintain the quality of life in these small towns and cities throughout the state of Minnesota. Again, I thank you for your time and attention to this important matter.
Thank you very much. Representative Bly, do you have other testifiers?
No, this is, we'll let Ross be the primary presenter, and then we'll take questions. We did also bring along some flyers that have some pictures of the downtown area north that we'd like to pass out to members.
Megan would pass that out. And I do appreciate your work on this, Bill. I know we started a while back on looking at things and so forth, so appreciate that.
I also want to thank you, Chair, for the work that you did in helping us come up with the proposal. We weren't sure going into it exactly how to address this issue, and you were very helpful in talking with us about how it might work out.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Well, let's go to the audience first. Anyone have any testimony for or against House File 2129? No one's rushing down to support or go against it, so it's all right. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Bly. As the other state representative from Northfield, I appreciate you bringing this legislation forward. And I know people know that actually I represent part of Northfield as well.
The good
part of Northfield. No, I'm just kidding. I have one ward in Dakota County. Mr. Chairman and Representative Bly, I'm reading through the revenue analysis detail on this. And at a citywide level for Northfield, approximately how much would this mean for, because what this is a shift, we're not lowering or raising taxes, what would be the amount of the shift in the Northfield community to properties that didn't meet this exclusion? So you are the testifier.
Representative Bly?
I'm actually not expert in that area. Could I call upon the research to help us
very
with that?
Good. And that is just fine, Representative Bly. We rely on research an awful lot. Mr. Hines, do you have that information? How much of a shift would that be on to other commercial industrial in the state general tax?
Mr. Chair, I haven't done a lot of work on this recently, at least. And I certainly don't have any Northfield specific information, but from the revenue department's analysis, which they made an assumption that 25% of the value in qualifying cities is in the downtown area, and I think they're also assuming and would all qualify under the at least 50 years old criteria that's in there. I don't know, that sounds reasonable to other people. It sounds plausible to me. They're getting a shift to the upper tier commercial of $5.7 million, and I was just looking at that. That's about a 0.2% increase in the overall tax burden for upper tier commercial industrial property. So that's a little bit of perspective on it, and I could do some more work on what it actually means for an individual property, maybe in the next little bit, but I don't have any Northfield specific information with me right here.
Representative Garofalo.
And thank you. And as a first-year member of this committee, I just want to make sure I understand it right, that the effects of this would be that whether it's a city levy, county levy, school district levy, by carving up an exception to the property, we redistribute that to the non-qualifying property, to Homestead, and other properties, like agriculture and things like that. Is that correct?
Mr. Hines? Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, the way this bill is constructed, it would not affect any of the local government taxes at all. It only affects the state general tax and shifts that. So all these properties, payments of school district, city, county taxes would be unaffected by this bill.
Thank you.
Representative Bly.
My testifier indicates to me that these estimates would be about 60 buildings that would be involved in this, and about $1,100 per building.
Okay, in Northfield.
Yeah, in Northfield.
Very good. Any other comments or questions? Representative Dittmer.
Thank you, Mr. Bly. Representative Bly, would Jesse James be in favor of this bill?
Well, certainly the folks...
Representative Bly?
Certainly the folks who defeated Jesse James would be.
Very good. Representative Mullery.
Mr. Chairman, a real important question. I don't see the Jesse James Cafe on here. It used to be the greatest place to get a steak dinner.
Representative Bly, is the Jesse James Cafe there?
Well, the Jesse James Cafe has now been converted into the Northfield Historical Society building, but there is now a place called The Hideaway, which is across the street, which I'm sure would meet all of your culinary expectations.
Very good. Any other comments? If not, thank you. for being here, and Representative Bly for presenting this, and Representative Tilbury renews his motion to lay over House File 2129 for possible inclusion into this.
Thank you very much. Report.
Thank you very much. At this time, we are going to go to the division report, and had a chance to meet with most of the members. Some were unavailable to make it earlier today, but just a few comments before we get going is that, you know, initially we got hit with a real bombshell this session, and that was that we have now a $6.4 billion deficit. And so, as the property tax division comprising about 9% of the budget, it's how can we balance the budget while still trying to protect property owners, jobs, and essential services. That is the real charge, and I think all of us here agreed with those goals. And I think with reform and innovation, we have done that with this division report. And I also think that besides this bill going a lot towards helping to balance the budget and protecting property owners, jobs, and essential services, I think we actually go a step further in that we provide a lot of accountability and value to property taxpayers. I think there's a number of things in this division report with the work of Representative Dietrich in looking at a more accountable state property tax system, and the work of Representative Lanning with his flexibility on government and his mandate reduction, and the looking at city and county performance measurements. I think we have added a lot of accountability, a lot of value, and a lot of efficiency to the system, but also to the property taxpayer. So I think with what you see before you in the division report is going to result in very few property tax increases. In fact, could actually provide some property tax relief. And I think that's really important here, while also providing additional value to property taxpayers, getting more value for every dollar of property taxes they pay. And so I want to thank all the members of this division. We had a lot of discussion in talking about budgets, in talking about what we wanted to do. And I understand as you look through, when you have several things, there are things you don't like in a bill. But I do think when taken in its entirety, we're going to find a bill that has a lot of reform in it, a lot of innovation, and a real focus on the property taxpayer as far as providing more value and keeping property taxes down. So I think that's going to be a real key here. I also want to thank all the staff for their wonderful work as always and in a very timely manner. I have to apologize that I could not be as much help as I wanted to this past weekend with things going on, but you have put together, you've captured everything that this committee and division has wanted, so I appreciate all the staff's efforts on this. So with that, I think what we have, like 40 minutes to do this, and we'll go over, but maybe we first start with the summary. Which one do we go first? Why don't we do the summary first? And so how long do we need for the spreadsheet? 10 minutes? 15? 10? How long do we need? Yeah, why am I looking? 10 minutes. So we'll do the overview until 5 after 4. And members, this is only an overview, so if you have questions, that's fine, but we're not going to debate the bill. Tomorrow, there will be a chance for public testimony, and if we have time, we will start marking up the bill. So members, if you have amendments, we can start doing that tomorrow. I would anticipate we'll go into Wednesday to finish off the bill and marking that up. But we could start tomorrow. if time, and I think we probably will be able to. And also, as rules, as far as amendments, we don't need a 24-hour rule. If you have a bill, let's say it was a bill, you can just introduce it as a bill. You don't have to rewrite it and put anything. Just have the bill there, and we can put the amendment. So we're not real strict on that. All right. Miss Dalton is going to start, and if you would please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Pat Dalton with House Research, and we're going to be taking you through the DE2 amendment to House File 2020. Article 1 is essentially House File 2020. The only change that I would point out to you is in Section 6, which is the County Local Option Sales Tax Authority. The one change we made is there is a change to the threshold for the reverse referendum. To trigger a reverse referendum, you now need the greater of 500 signatures or 10% of the votes cast in the last general election.
Mr. Hain.
I guess, Mr. Chair, we'll move on to Article 2, Property Tax Reform.
Any questions on that? That's the county revenue reform. All right, very good. Please proceed.
Article 2 is primarily the work, I guess exclusively, of the working group that were formed and each reported their bills out that we've all given a hearing to. The first two sections relate to the work of the one that you chaired, Mr. Chairman, and Council on Local Results and Innovation. And just real briefly, Section 1 creates the Council on Local Results and Innovation and asks them to come up with a set of standard measures for performance, standard performance measures for counties and cities, and in 1 year, and then in the second year, to develop minimum standards for comprehensive performance measurement systems, report those to the legislature, and direct the state auditor to kind of convene the initial offering and somewhat host the operation of the council. And then Section 2 relates to what the local government's relation to that council and to the reporting requirements, or not requirements, but the measures that they can choose to participate in, and defines that they will receive benefits in terms of a reimbursement for some of their expenses if they choose to participate, and relief from levy limits and or through some taxation hearings. Maybe I'll leave it at that unless there's questions, and let Section 3 and 4 relate to the one that Representative Lanning chaired. And Pat, I think we'll talk about those.
Members of the committee, Section 3, 4, and 6 come from the local, I always forget what it's called. What is it called? The mandate relief, the Working Group on Local Government Mandate Relief. Sections 3 and 4 relate to the reduction in the library maintenance of effort if there are aid cuts. The one change from what was in the original bill is a cross-reference to Article 1, the county local sales tax. If a county imposes a local sales tax to essentially offset their county program aid, they will not have any relief from their library maintenance of effort because their budget would not be cut. Section 6 is the two-year moratorium on the increases or new mandates and matching fund requirements. And the rest of that bill is actually going to be in Article 3.
Baker.
For the record, my name is Karen Baker, House Research. Sections 5 and 7 are the two sections that came from Representative Dietrich. Working group on the property tax system benchmarks and critical indicators.
I'm sorry, Ms. Baker, where are we? What page?
On the summary, we're on page 8.
Oh, okay.
Section 5.
Okay,
you're
very good. Thank
following
you.
On the summary. And Section 5 includes the all the property tax system benchmarks and critical indicators that came from Representative Dietrich's working group. including all the property tax principles and major indicators, and it also established the property tax working group that has a life of 2 years until February 1st of 2011, and it also includes a provision that requires that on or before March 1st, 2011, and every 2 years thereafter, the House and Senate committees must review major indicators and a certain accountability and efficiency of the property tax system, and that each of those committees prepare a resolution on targets and benchmarks for use during the biennium. It also has a little discussion on the Department of Revenue's revenue estimates and on the local impact notes, and then it further goes on Section 7 to require the Commissioner of Finance to distribute at least $150,000 of the $207,000 current appropriation that is in current law to contract with representative associations so that counties, cities, towns, and school districts can help furnish more information to the legislature on local impact notes. I think Pat's going to move on to Article 3.
Ms. Dalton and Representative Lanning, Article 3 is the Lanning article. So you have an old whole article after. Please proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Article 3 essentially has the local government flexibility provisions that were in Article 2 through 4 of House File 1195. This was the longest bill, and it had a lot of provisions, a lot of articles, so it just worked out better. There are a few other provisions from Article 1 of that bill that were not in Article 2. They relate to truth and taxation, and they actually show up in the truth and taxation article that Ms. Baker will be taking you through later. Sections 1 through 6 and Section 17 of Article 3 relate to the establishment of the Legislative Commission on Mandate Reform, and this is the commission to review all of the mandates. And the language is the same as it was in the Lanning Bill. Section 7 establishes two dates a year in which rules will become effective instead of them just being effective whenever anybody wants them. Section 8, 13, no. Section 8 strikes the limit on the number of contracts per year for the use of best value contracting. Sections 9 and 11 relate to what happens when a cemetery is abandoned and either a county or a town has to take it over. It essentially allows them to prohibit future burials in the cemetery. Section 10 is the provision from the township that strikes the $60 cap on compensation for fence viewers and allows the township to actually charge the actual cost of that provision. Section 12 allows a county to be open only 4 business days a week instead of 5. Sections 13, 14, and 15 all relate to updating the threshold amounts of contract and day labor. And this is really to get them all in compliance with the provision, the update that happened in the Uniform Municipal Contracting Law last year. Section 16 strikes the $10 cap on booking fees and allows counties to actually recover the cost of booking. And as I said, Section 17 relates to when the Legislative Commission on Mandate Reform needs to meet.
Thank you. Before you go on, would someone explain now what levy limits, what's happening to levy limits in this bill? Because I know it, and I see here since maybe, and maybe spell that out where it is in the law again, or in, not in the law, in the division report.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, levy limits are actually dealt with in Article 1, the original House File 2020 bill. Levy limits are repealed for cities, effective next year.
Which was in the Lanning Bill.
The Lanning Bill effectively repealed levy limits effective next year for everybody. They continue to be repealed effective for cities next year. There will be one more year of levy limits for counties under Article 1 to deal with the fact that they're going to be getting this new levy, local sales tax authority.
Okay. So now, if you're a county and you do not impose the 1/2 cent sales tax, are you under levy limits?
Mr. Chair, yes, you are.
Okay, so you're
but the levy limits are structured in such a way that you can levy back for your aid cuts.
Right. Very good.
Moving on to Article 4, the truth in taxation, like Ms. Dalton said, the one piece of that is from Representative Lanning's bill, and that is that it eliminated the truth in taxation public hearing and the newspaper notice effective for taxes payable in 2010 and thereafter. The other part of it advances the various dates that are necessary to allow the truth in taxation notices to be prepared and mailed earlier so that they would go out sometime between October 15th and 24th. They're currently mailed between the 10th and the 24th, so this would speed them up approximately a month. That, however, is not effective until taxes payable in 2011 and thereafter, so there's a delay on that. I don't think I really need to go through all the sections because there's a numerous sections that the dates are just advanced to allow for the notices to be speeded up. And you can see Section 5 really is the one that is the key one that advances the date for mailing the truth in taxation notices by that month. It does provide a requirement, though, and this is from Representative Lanning's bill. You'll see on page 13 of the summary under Section 5, that second paragraph, that it does have a requirement that since the truth in taxation hearings have been eliminated, taxing authorities must provide the auditor with information on when their regularly scheduled meetings are that have occurred, you know, after the notice has been mailed. And this is so that taxpayers can know when they're going to be talking about budget and levy, when that's going to be discussed. And so there is a provision that that says that the county auditor has, the taxing authorities have to tell the auditor. And that's effective for payable 10 and thereafter, and that's because the hearings have been eliminated for payable in 10. And the rest of them are just all the various changes that need to be made to eliminate the hearing and the newspaper notice, as well as speeding the various dates up. Moving to the property tax article, the first, I'm now on page 16.
Members, any questions on Article 4? Okay, we'll move to Article 5. Ms. Baker.
And in the property tax article, the first three sections of the are all related to the Rainbow case for providing institutions of pure public charity property tax exemption and how we're dealing with that. This was the section one goes through what factors the assessor has to consider and defining grants, and this language is exactly the same as it was in the introduced bill that Representative Marquardt carried. The second provision, or the second section there, ties with the first one, and in Representative Marquardt's bill, there was a provision that basically said that section one's not to contract or expand the definitions of institutions of pure public charity, but to provide clear standards that can be applied uniformly to determine eligibility. This had some, we added some language here that requires the Commissioner of Revenue to prepare a bulletin providing guidance to assessors as to how the Commissioner interprets Section 1. And also in the language it says that the Commissioner has to provide examples and so that the assessors know what are the reasonable thresholds for qualifying for exemption. Section 3 is a provision that was introduced by Representative Doty, and this is just a separate property tax exemption for nonprofit nursing homes or boarding care facilities that are certified to participate in the medical assistance programs, or that certify to the commissioner that it does not discharge residents due to their inability to pay. There were some people that were concerned that even with the North Star language and what was in Section 1, that nursing homes and the boarding care facilities should really have a separate exemption when they're nonprofit facilities. Do you want to talk about the disaster?
Article 5, Sections 4, 5, 6, 4, 5, and 6 all are basically what has been reformed from a bill that Representative Broad brought forward that we heard earlier in session that has to do with homes that are damaged in a disaster and are rebuilt, providing a gradual step up to full value, and if the value increases by I think it's a $50,000 amount over the value before the disaster, just provides that be stepped up to that value rather than go to the full value right away. And this was a result, some concerns were raised when we heard that bill, and there was negotiations between Representative Broad and the Department of Revenue and myself, and worked out some new language that dealt with some of the assessor's concerns. Then Section 7 is provision from Representative Loeffler's bill that provides that does not allow any new properties to qualify for relative homestead classification after July 1, 2009. This only affects non-agricultural properties, and it would just put a freeze on the number of relative homesteads in existence.
The next provision is an extension of Class 4C property class to property that contains 20 or fewer rental units, is devoted to temporary residential occupancy and located in a city or town outside the 7-county metro and has a population of 2,500 or less. This was a bill of Representative David's, and in committee, Representative David's did delete everything from his original bill. And this is a language that was in the delete everything. What it would do is it would put that property in Class 4C, and right now it's in Class 3A, so it's considered commercial, and it would move it into 4C, and it would have a market value of 1% on the first 500 and 1.25% on the excess, and then in addition it would get the seasonal rec state general rate, which I'm on page 17 now in Section 8, and the 18.214% is what the state general rate is for seasonal rec, which it would pay as compared to the full commercial rate. The next section extends the time period from 1 year to 5 years for a surviving spouse of a deceased disabled veteran. They can qualify for the disabled veteran's homestead market value exclusion, provided the spouse remains in the house and does not remarry. This was a bill of Representative Junkies. The next is Representative Scalzi's, and it just has a provision that stipulates that in prescribing the form for the property tax statement, the statement cannot imply or state that property tax credits are paid by the state. The next section is a provision of Representative House, and that is it authorizes counties to use a portion of their proceeds from tax forfeited lands to replace all or a portion of their county program aid or market value credit reimbursement when they get cuts or on allotments. And this is just a two-year, it's until January 1, 2012. Is when this will expire. The next several sections 12, 13, 14, 15, and 16 all relate to the senior citizen property tax deferral program, and it makes three changes. The first is that right now both, if one is married, both spouses have to be at least 65 when they qualify for the deferral. Under this change, only one would have to be 65 and the other one could be 62 years old. The second change is the maximum household income changes from $60,000 to $75,000, and this is a household income. It's the same income that's used for property tax refund purposes. And then the third change, which is down in Section 16, reduces the maximum limit on the interest that's charged on these deferred property taxes. Right now it's 5% is the maximum, and the bill reduces it to 3%. Section 17 is the Sustainable Forest Incentive Program, and it makes two changes. The first change that it makes is right now the formula, the way it works, is it says that it's $7 per acre, and it also uses a calculation which uses property tax and, or uses a value in a and a township average tax rate. And what you do is you compute that formula and then you compare it to the $7, and it takes the greater of those two. And the formula, like this year, resulted in $8.61. What this bill does is it changes that so that it's $6 is the maximum that it can be per acre. And then the second change is that in current law there is no maximum annual payment per claimant, and this proposal caps that at $400,000 per claimant, that's for annual payment. The next, Section 18, deals with emergency medical service districts, and this is a bill of Representative Coonan's, and the original bill had a total elimination of the sunset. What this bill does is it extends the sunset for, or extends the effective date for 3 more years to taxes payable in 2015. And one thing that's important to keep in mind here is that once a district is established, it can continue to levy even if the sunset does expire. So it doesn't affect any of the new of the ones that are out there. However, we have very few of these special districts that have been established so far. There's just a small handful. And the next two provisions are two clarifications to the Metropolitan Area Plat Law. There were changes made in the Plat Law in the 2008 omnibus. And what Sections 19 and 20 do is that they clarify that that change that was made that says that if land is sold or transfer, it has to be brought up to full value. What this change was really intended was to say that it only affects land platted after the 2008 omnibus tax law was passed, and it wasn't probably written quite as carefully as it should have been, and didn't address just the land platted after the effective date of the 2008 bill.
Okay, we've got about 4 minutes left before I want to go to the spreadsheet. So on aids and credits, if you would just go over those numbers, and if you would also break up LGA market value credits on the cuts, if you could. I know there's people waiting to hear that in the audience.
Moving into the Article 6 aids and credits, we'll try to go really quickly through this. The first section is the part that was from the bill we just heard earlier today about the reduction in the market value homestead credit that saves $20 million per year by shaving it just a little bit for all recipients. Section 2 has to do with the ongoing payments to market value homestead credit, and provides that the cuts in pay 2010 are carried over to 2011 and 2012, and we'll get to those cuts in a couple of sections later. Section 3 is a reduction in disparity reduction aid. This is a program that pays places that had very high property tax rates back in the late 80s when this program was created, and it's a grandfathered aid amount. Currently, you're limited to, it can only take your tax rate down to 90%, and under this provision, that would bring it up to 113%. That saves $5 million per year. Section 4 is then the homeowner's property tax refund. That's the $20 million increase that goes along with Section 1's market value credit reduction decrease. Again, that was the bill we just heard earlier today.
Section 5 is a modification of Representative Cole's bill to provide an extra payment to the city of Mayer for 4 years. It's been delayed till 2011 because it works better with all the aid cuts, and it's been changed to $100,000. Section 6, 7, 8, 9, and 11 all deal with the aid cuts in city LGA market value credits and also with the county program aid. I'm going to go through them basically from the overview. The first thing is that the growth in the current LGA and county program aid appropriations of 2% for Pay 10 and 4% in Pay 11 have been eliminated. So then when we're looking at the rest of these cuts, we're talking about them from the Pay 2009 certified amount. Pay 2009 LGA market value credit is cut by $50 million to cities in, and about $30 million of it comes from LGA, $20 million of it comes from market value credit. The cut is made as a percentage of adjusted net tax capacity instead of a percentage of budget. This is because local governments will be allowed to essentially levy back for their reduction, and so this equalizes the tax rate increase across jurisdictions resulting from these cuts. The cuts from between certified 2009 and pay 2010 for cities will be $68.2 million, $46 million of it will come from LGA, $22 million of it will come from market value credit. In 2011 and 2012, those market value credit cuts to cities will be extended, so they will continue. Anybody who's getting a market value credit cut will see that same cut in 2011 and 2012. Beginning in pay 2011, the LGA program will go back to being calculated based on the formula, and the appropriation will be $516.5 million, which is just under $10 million less than the certified pay 2009 amount. For county program aid, the pay 2009 certified amounts are cut by $15.7 million. This is 0.2% of their adjusted net tax capacity. Their cuts in future years are determined under Article 1 and will be based on whether they impose a local county sales tax. And there are printouts in your packets. There's two printouts for cities. One is titled 10-8-2020-DE2, and one is 09-2020-DE2. They're for each of the years, and there is a county program aid for 2009, and you should have the printout also from House File 2020 in your packet as well.
Ms. Felton, for fiscal year 12 and 13, if the Department of Revenue comes back, would you explain how that would work? All the right now they're calculating the county local option sales tax, and if you know they have to anticipate a certain number. So if the savings are greater than what we have plugged in, that will go directly into 12 and 13 local government aid payments. So that could go up their payments.
Mr. Chair, right now, and as Ms. Schill will talk about when she goes through the spreadsheet, we are assuming that nobody is participating in the local sales tax, and so the savings from the county program aid in 2010 and future years is booked at $100 million, which is kind of the minimum we would get if nobody imposed the local sales tax. If everybody imposed the local sales tax, the savings to the state would be about $124 million. My understanding from discussions with the Department of Revenue this morning is that they're thinking somewhere around 85% of the counties will participate just because of the additional aid, the additional money, the revenue that they would get under the local sales tax. But we don't have the final revenue estimate from the department at this time.
Okay. Well, Article 7 is the recreational property tax deferral, which I think everyone's heard before. And we're going to just move to Article 8 on miscellaneous. Who would like to quickly cover that in about 30 seconds?
Mr. Chair, Article 8, probably the only thing that no one's seen before is Section 1. This allows local governments to recertify a levy by January 15th in a year in which there has been a December aid cut due to a governor's unallotment. There was some discussion this year about whether counties and cities could have recertified to deal with those cuts, and there was no time to pass the bill. So this essentially passes it prospectively. So if this occurs in the future, they've got essentially 2 weeks. If they really need to, they can go in and recertify. Section 2 provides for some changes in the special levy law. This would essentially only apply to counties because they're the only ones who are going to continue to be subject to it. It deals with allowing people to levy back for the paid 2009 cuts, which is not allowed under current law. It allows a special levy for the cost of confining sex offenders to the extent the state does not fund its share, and it does allow for the cost of maintaining and operating a new public safety and courts facility. Section 3 clarifies that your levy limit base does not go down if the implicit price deflator goes down. So if we actually have deflation, we aren't going to reduce everyone's levy limit. Section 4 is the authority to allow emergency certificates of indebtedness. Section 5 deals with Representative Kahn's bill taking out that one restaurant or bar from the Minneapolis downtown taxing area. Section 6 allows takes the language out of the Mankato local sales tax requiring the hockey arena to be attached to the Civic Center. And Section 7 allows Owatonna's to swap out one road project for another that's being funded from the local sales tax. Section 8 is just a conforming change to Section 6.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Michelle, if you'd like to go over the spreadsheet.
Mr. Chair, and I think I'll do that from my seat since I have about 5 minutes. First of all, everyone should have 3 documents. The smallest is the most important. It's a single two-sided page, and it is entitled Property Tax Division Report, probably just as the others are. This is the base sheet that shows all the changes. And this is the sheet from which I've done the other 2 sheets. So all of the changes that you see on this sheet move forward into the other sheets. Lines 1 through 5 are reference points only, talking about the February forecast for significant programs that are might be a basis for reference as we go down the sheet. Lines 10, 11, and 12 have to do with the area of property tax refunds and deferrals. Line 11 is House File 2204 that you heard just today with the homeowner property tax refunds. As you can see, we don't have any impact in fiscal 10. Impact in 11, 12, and 13 are $18.9 million, $19.3 million, and $20 million even. Line 13, House File 1975, which is a senior property tax deferral. You're familiar with that. We have that in committee. House File 511 is on line 15. This is a senior rec residential deferral. Once again, we heard that one in committee. And you see that, and you'll see in other lines on the spreadsheet where we have a couple of impacts. This one in particular had a fiscal note attached to it in addition to the revenue estimate change, and so I've incorporated that onto the spreadsheet. Lines 19 through 24 have to do with the changes in the market value credit. Line 19 in particular has the reimbursement cut for cities at $19.7 million, reduction in 10, reduction of $22.2 million in each 11, 12, and 13. Line 21 is the overall change, the reduction to the market value credit there that Jesse talked about.
Here's what I think I'm going to do.
Okay.
Because we're out of time here in just a couple minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Is I think what we will do is start over on this tomorrow first thing. Because we're going to have time yet. And we lost over a half hour on the session. So, and this is important. And then also, members, for tomorrow, if you have any questions on what staff covered earlier, and I know we went through this maybe quicker than we wanted to, we'll come back to that. So we're going to start tomorrow with the spreadsheet, and then we're going to any questions on the summary. And then we will go to public testimony, and then if we have time tomorrow, we will start the markup, so if you have amendments. But you know it's probably going to go into Wednesday, so that's going to be the main day with amendments, but we can start tomorrow with that. So members, also with your material, we will not be throwing this away, but keep it all together. You can certainly take it with you tonight to look at things, but don't throw it away because we're not going to be redoing more. So with that, members, anything I need? We have one set of minutes to do, and Representative Loeffler moves the March 25th, 2009 minutes. Any discussion? Now I'm going to call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. Very good. Like I said, we'll start tomorrow with the spreadsheet and any questions, and we'll make sure we understand everything before we move on and so forth. Thank you, staff. Thank you, members, and we are adjourned.